Life Talk Radio presents Health and Longevity, the program dedicated to bringing you cutting-edge information and interviews that can change your life. On each edition, nutritionist, registered dietitian, and board-certified anti-aging health practitioner, Dr. John Westerdahl, will show you how to achieve a longer, healthier life using the latest breakthroughs in nutrition, wellness, and lifestyle medicine. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Westerdahl.
Welcome to Health and Longevity. I'm Dr. John Westerdahl. Whole grains play a vital part in a healthy diet that supports health and longevity. On today's program, we will be speaking with Monica Spiller, one of the nation's leading authorities on the topic of whole grains. Monica Spiller is the founder and director of the Whole Grain Connection. But before we get into today's exciting topic, let's hear the latest news and research affecting our health and longevity today.
Dr. Westerdahl presents the Health and Longevity News and Research Update, bringing you the most pertinent and important information about your health and longevity.
Well, a doctor's group is suing California for failing to add processed meat to the state carcinogen list. The Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, a nonprofit with more than 25,000 members in California, filed a lawsuit against the state of California on March 11th for failing to include cancer-causing processed meat, such as hot dogs, bacon, and deli meat, on the state's list of substances known to cause cancer, as required by Proposition 65. The lawsuit argues that California has neglected to follow a state law requiring the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment to include on its carcinogen list substances listed as human or animal carcinogens by the International Agency for Research on Cancer. In 2015, after 22 experts from 10 countries assessed more than 800 epidemiological studies that were classified the consumption of processed meats as carcinogens to humans on the basis of sufficient evidence for colorectal cancer. The experts highlighted a meta-analysis that concluded that for each 50-gram portion of processed meat, that's about one hot dog, eaten daily, increases the risk of colorectal cancer by 18%. Research shows that eating 50 grams of processed meat daily also increases the risk of breast cancer, prostate cancer, pancreatic cancer, and overall cancer mortality. Through 2017, 2018, and 2019, the Physicians Committee urged the organization OEHHA to follow the law and list processed meat as a cancer-causing substance. In February 2018, the Physicians Committee backed a resolution introduced in the California State Legislature by then-Senator Ricardo Lara urging the OEHHA to add processed meat to Proposition 65. In September 2019, the organization told the Physicians Committee that the agency would make a determination regarding processed meat by January 2020, but has failed to do so. It is a clear-cut case. California has been violating the law for nearly 5 years by failing to add processed meat to the Proposition 65 list. Plaintiffs also include Physicians Committee members Donald D. Forrester, M.D., a family medicine physician in Sacramento, California, Anna Herbie, registered dietitian who resides in Mendocino County. Ms. Herbie works with patients to help prevent and reverse chronic diseases through nutrition. California must commit to making sure that every resident knows that processed meat increases cancer risk, and Proposition 65 is the place to make it clear, according to the dietitian Anna Herbie. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cause of cancer-related deaths in California. The American Cancer Society estimates that California will have 15,530 new cases of colorectal cancer in 2020 and 5,480 deaths from the disease. Tens of thousands of Californians are diagnosed or die from colorectal cancer every year. Adding processed meat to Proposition 65 would provide first-line defense against this deadly disease. We'll be right back after this short break.
Would you like to live a happier, healthier, and longer fulfilled life? Then visit us at healthandlongevityradio.com. That's one word, healthandlongevityradio.com. There you'll find valuable information and resources that can help you achieve optimal health and give you the secrets to longevity. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com. It could change your life.
Welcome back to Health and Longevity. Do you have questions about nutrition, health, or longevity? This is your chance to have them answered. On each program, Dr. Westerdahl will choose a key question from our listening audience and respond to it on the air. Due to the high volume of emails, Dr. Westerdahl cannot personally answer each question on our broadcast. If you would like to submit a question, please go to our website, healthandlongevityradio.com. Once there, you will see a button to submit your questions. And now, the question of the day.
And our question for today is, are there ways to relieve varicose veins? We know varicose veins are unsightly and uncomfortable, and I can recognize that. You know, veins bulge, they throb, and they feel heavy. The lower legs suffer the most, and sometimes the ankles may swell as well. So to relieve varicose veins, don't cross your legs when sitting, keep your weight down, avoid standing for prolonged periods of time. If your job or hobby requires you to stand, shift your weight from one leg to the other every few minutes. Just wiggling your toes can help also. Now, I recommend wear elastic support stockings as advised by your doctor. Don't wear clothing or undergarments that are too tight or constrict your waist, groin, or legs. Eat a high-fiber diet. Eat high-fiber foods like bran cereals, beans, whole grain breads, and fruits and vegetables, and drink at least 8 glasses of water a day. These promote regularity. Now, to prevent swelling, cut your salt intake. Exercise regularly. Walking is a good choice. It improves leg and vein strength. Exercise your legs, and for doing that, you can, from a sitting position, rotate your feet at the ankles, turning them first clockwise, then counterclockwise, using a circular motion, and then next extend your legs forward and point your toes to the ceiling, then the floor. Then lift your feet off the floor and gently bend your legs back and forth at the knees. And another thing you can do is to elevate your legs when resting. Varicose veins aren't usually serious, but if a rash or sore develops on the leg, contact your doctor.
And now, Health and Longevity's special feature, where Dr. Westerdahl interviews leading experts and personalities on vital topics important to your health and longevity.
Our special guest today on Health and Longevity is Monica Spiller. Monica is a leading authority on the topic of whole grains. She is the founder and director of the Whole Grain Connection, an organization that educates the public about the benefits of whole grains, also giving recipes and anything on the topic of whole grains. It provides some great information, and I recommend that you go to their website. It's called the wholegrainconnection.org, and you can learn more about the Whole Grain Connection. And we would like to welcome Monica Spiller. Thank you, Monica, for being with us today.
I'm delighted.
We have had you on the program before a couple of years ago. For those that did not hear the program, tell us about your background and how you got interested in the topic of whole grains.
Primarily because of my father's illness as a young man. He had duodenal ulcer and finally died from colon cancer at the age of 61. And this theme was in my childhood, and I know that his family ate a lot of white bread. So I met my husband, Dr. Gene Spiller. He was at the beginning of collecting the information that was then known in 1975 about dietary fiber, and there were very few people in that research field at that time. And so when he brought people give talks like Dr. Dennis Burkitt and Hugh Trowell, who were physicians in Africa for the previous 30 years, and they told their story, I was impressed. And the story that impressed me was that they in Africa had recognized the native people eating their normal diet did not suffer from cardiovascular disease. They didn't have diabetes. They were normal weight and generally did not have the diseases that we associate with white people, Europeans.
They were real pioneers in the area of whole grains, and they made a lot of people aware of the importance of fiber in the diet.
Exactly. And although there were only perhaps half a dozen people thinking about this and looking into it at that time in 1975, by now it's huge research community that takes an interest. So a lot of research has been done in the meantime to corroborate the fact that if dietary fiber is sufficient in the diet, then people do not suffer from diabetes and cardiovascular disease and colon cancer. They don't have those diseases, and they live a longer life.
Well, that information has been known for a long time now. And let's get to the basics. I'm really surprised at how many people today don't even know what a whole grain is. I talk to people and tell them in my lectures and through my education that everyone should eat more whole grains. And people will often ask, well, what is a whole grain? So, Monica, why don't you define that? What is a whole grain?
Indeed, the whole grain is the whole seed of wheat. And the whole seed of wheat has an outer skin, a very thin and very flexible skin called bran. And of course, it has a germ, and the germ is where the new little plant sprouts from. And then there's a food source in the middle, and the food source is the endosperm. So there are three main parts to this seed of wheat. There's the bran, the germ, and the endosperm. And the modern millers, out of ignorance in the late 1800s, thought that it did not matter if they took away the bran and the germ. And they developed the roller milling process that we use to this day. It's a process for removing the bran and the germ completely. And so we're left with white flour that is simply the food source plant, but the bran and the germ contain the vitamins and the minerals and other plant chemicals that are essential, absolutely essential for making use of that flour, of that food source, that starch that's in the middle of the grain, that's in the endosperm, that's in white flour. And it's the same with people. We need those vitamins and minerals and other chemicals that are in the bran and the germ in order to properly assimilate the white flour.
Now, some people have gone a little further than what whole grains are and actually use the term intact whole grains. Can you distinguish the difference between what is a intact whole grain versus regular whole grain?
Oh, maybe some people have an idea that a whole grain, that an intact grain, might be only if you never grind up.
Okay.
But the important thing is that if you do grind it up, then you don't take anything away. You don't sift anything off, or you just take the whole clean seed and use all those parts in the flour. And it's not necessary to have it still looking like a grain. Mm-hmm. So that's the difference you were thinking of?
Well, I think that's what it is. In other words, the intact whole grain hasn't been ground up into a flour. It's not processed, or it's just been minimally processed. The germ and the bran has not been removed. It's more of the whole intact whole grain as opposed to a whole grain that's been processed or made into a fine powder. So it's intact. And I think that part of the idea is with that is that it has less of effect of turning into a sugar quickly and so forth. It's more in its natural state.
Okay, so I really think that's a very important recognition, because the roller milling process is a very special process. It's not just a grinding up process.
Right.
They wet the grain so that the bran can be peeled off in the first step, and then they cut off the germ in the second step, and then in the third step, they grind up the endosperm. And the process is used in this way, then you do have separate germ and separate bran that can be sold to the health food store. But this method, I mean, theoretically, you'd think, okay, all you have to do is to put all the pieces together again, and you have a whole grain flour. But the problem is, because they wet the grain at the beginning, you can imagine if you put the whole thing together again, you'd have wet whole grain flour. Mm-hmm. And wet whole grain flour does not keep. It goes moldy.
Right.
So that's an impossible situation. So because the milling style, which is still the milling style practically worldwide, and that is the problem. The problem with roller milled flour is that the pieces, the wet bran and the wet germ, you can imagine the germ is trying to make a new plant, so the enzymes in that germ are working overtime, and there are a lot of oils in that germ. So in order to recombine the three parts at the end of the roller milling system, the bran would need to be dried, the germ would need to also be heated in some way to stop that fast enzyme activity and the oils turning rancid, and then the recombination could be made. But as you can imagine, the flavor of a flour, of a whole grain flour produced in this way, is compromised. So the much better way for producing 100% whole grain or whole wheat flour is simply to take dry grain, as dry as possible, actually, and to grind it in some other system, in a stone mill system. But there are actually some new kind of mills available now that will grind them really fast and almost explode the grain and produce a very fine whole grain flour with all the parts, all the bran and all the germ and all the endosperm. And those new mills, as well as people who really are very good at grinding with a stone mill, the latest is to realize the bran and the germ, if they're ground nice and finely, then they can be made into a bread or whatever in such a way that the bran seems to disappear. And the textures are, texture of the bread can be much closer to the kind of texture that people have come to expect with a white bread. So no longer is it necessary to expect, if you have a whole grain bread, that it's chunky or it weighs more because there's more material in there, but its texture can be comparable, can be spongy and springy, just like a white flour product.
When did white flour start coming about? My understanding was in the early 1900s when people started to process the grains and refine them and so forth. But people tell me that it actually started before then. When historically did white flour and white bread really start coming around?
Well, the roller milling system, which was the final ability to take out all the bran and all the germ, that dates from about 1880.
Okay.
But previous to that, at the end of the 1700s even, at the end of the 1700s, they developed this that were extremely efficient. So they ground up the flour at that time so that the bran and the germ were deliberately large flakes. And then they used these sifters and they could take out pretty much all the bran and the germ, not quite. You could say that process took out about 15% of the total flour components. And in 1880, when they did the roller milling system, they took out 25% of the total components. And you might actually ask, what on earth do they do with all that 25% component?
Right.
And the awful thing, I think, is that humans are no longer presented with it, except occasionally in a health food store. Instead, it's fed to animals, and it actually makes the large-scale meat production industry possible.
Right.
So if we somehow did manage to convince these millers to give us the flour that we really need to be healthy, probably the meat production would go down because the meat producers would not have this tremendous supply of bran and germ, which is fantastic for animals, just as would be fantastic for humans.
Monica, your organization, the Whole Grain Connection, keeps up with the latest research on the health benefits of whole grains. Tell us about some of the current research about the importance of whole grains and their importance in regards to our health and wellness.
Well, I was very interested to see a new paper that was published. There's been so much information obtained by scientists in the past decades now, since 1975. And this group of researchers in New Zealand, they looked into all that literature and said, what can we make of all this data? And they found if people did nothing else to change, if they changed nothing else in their way of life or whatever, except increase dietary fiber, they would reduce their risk for all these diseases, such as the diabetes and so on. The paper is heading is about diabetes management. And the things increasing dietary fiber would improve are those measurements that the doctors make, what I'm looking here, your fasting plasma glucose people have to measure, that goes down. The insulin resistance, that goes down. And the weight of people goes down to a healthy weight. And the body mass index goes down to something that's a healthy level. So, well, how can we actually use that information? And they say from baseline that a tremendous number of people who are eating white bread or, you know, unrefined flour products, their baseline is of dietary fiber as a result of the fruits and vegetables and nuts and things like that that they eat. But the thing that they're eating most of, presumably, is the grain food, the bread usually, breakfast, noon, and night. And the baseline dietary fiber is round about 19 or 20 grams per day. And the desired value is 35 grams a day or more. Now, for you to think about, that it means that if you eat your grain foods, whole grain, all you need to do is to make at least 4 of those servings in a day, whole grain, and you'll be up to the value that preserves your health.
Well, Monica, there's a wealth of information that you offer for those interested in learning more about whole grains and how they can be used, their benefits, recipes, and much more. Tell us about your website. Tell us about the Whole Grain Connection and the resources that you can offer for people interested in learning more about whole grains. And a lot of this information is all free of charge. Tell us about it.
If you go to the website, www.wholegrainconnection.org, what I like to promote as one of the most useful things, it's the nutritional values that whole grains have. And there's a link to a 12-page description of those nutritional values. You don't have to read it from one end to the other, but you can dip into it to discover what you'd be gaining by studying those nutritional values. We have a seed company. The Whole Grain Connection is a seed company. So there's a catalog of seeds for farmers. We'd like farmers to grow grains that are then going to be destined for whole grain end products. And the recipe section is mostly about sourdough fermentation of whole grains instead of yeast, simple yeast leavening of whole grains, and the production of bread. And the production of bread can turn into production of bread rolls and sliced bread and effectively whatever you eat in the way of grain foods that would be fermented.
Well, thank you. And once again, the website to look up is the wholegrainconnection.org. And so, Monica, thank you so much for being with us today on Health and Longevity. We wish you the best of success as you continue your work in teaching people about the benefits of whole grains for health and longevity. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
The coronavirus, COVID-19, has impacted communities around the world. Many people have wondered whether there are steps that they can take to stay healthy. Tune in next week for a special program on the coronavirus pandemic.
Would you like to live a happier, healthier, and longer fulfilled life? Then visit us at healthandlongevityradio.com. That's one word, healthandlongevityradio.com. There you'll find valuable information and resources that can help you achieve optimal health and give you the secrets to longevity. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com. It could change your life.
That's it for this week's program. This is Dr. John Westerdahl wishing you the best of health and longevity.
This has been Health and Longevity with Dr. John Westerdahl, a production of Life Talk Radio. Join us again next week on the same station and time for Health and Longevity. The preceding information on this program has been general information about your health and is not to be taken as professional medical advice, nor is it intended to serve as a substitute for medical attention. Do not change your diet or exercise habits without guidance from your medical doctor, especially if you have health problems or are on medication. Do not change your medications without the advice and supervision of your medical doctor. If you have a medical condition, we encourage you to seek the consultation of a medical doctor experienced in dietary change and lifestyle medicine. And as always, we wish you the best of health.